So I'm recording this. It's a little quieter. I'm on my way to the airport. I'm going in for the Yeshivat HaRetzion Lugush dinner, just for 24 hours. But I'll be missing 2 days of davening with the Yeshiva, so I won't be giving Shiram on Tuesday and Wednesday. So I wanted to keep this series going, because people are listening, and we're trying to get ready for Pesach. So we're discussing the Psukim of Arami Ovid Avi, the section of Tzei Olamad. And the first pasuk, which describes the descent to Mitzrayim, describes Arami Ovid Avi, whether it's Yaakov who was wandering, or whether it was Lavan who wanted to destroy him. Vayered Mitzrayim ma'anus al-pi ha-dibor. Yaakov was very fearful about going down. Vayered Mitzrayim ma'lagur sham. And despite Yaakov's best laid plans not to be mishtakea, Golus has a way of catching up on you. The continuation of that first pasuk, which describes the descent to Mitzrayim, Vahisham lagoy atzum varav. And we became a nation that was atzum varav. So, of course, the Haggadah parcels each phrase and each word. So today's shir will focus on how the Haggadah interprets Vahisham Lagoy. Now, uncharacteristically, remember, the way that Arami Ovid Avi is structured is that each of these words is decoded by finding a parallel pasuk in Tanakh, which uses the same word, but in that pasuk, the connotations or the intentions of the word are much clearer. So, for example, Vayered Mitzrayim ma'anus al-pi ha-dibor, and then we'll quote Parshas Vayigash, where Hashem is coming to, there's no pasuk, but some of the other cases there are psukim. Here, in Arami Ovid Avi, this middle part of the first pasuk, Vahisham Lagoy, that God doesn't quote any pasuk, it just describes what the word goy means. And it has a very, I would say, ambiguous phrase, a phrase that it uses to interpret the word goy, that can mean many different things. Vahisham Lagoy, Melame Shehoyu Yisrael Mitsuyanim Sham. The Jewish people were Mitsuyan. In general, very, very general, Mitsuyan means discernible, identifiable. Yirmiyah tells Am Yisrael Hatzivu Lach Tziyunim, encouraging them that when they leave Eretz Yisrael, they should put a trail of breadcrumbs so they could find their way back. So a Tzion Derech is something that you would use to identify, in this case, location, in this case, Am Yisrael. So they were an identifiable nation. They just didn't get lost in the woodwork. They didn't disappear into the cultural landscape. Now, what does that mean, that they didn't disappear? So the simple meaning, which is not the meaning that most of us read into this word, Lagoy, is that despite the fact that they were in Galus, and despite the fact that they were in a foreign land, and despite the fact that exile has a way of depressing the immigrant culture, they stood out, they were successful, they were prestigious, they were identifiable. Why is that the simple pshat? Because that's what Hashem tells Yaakov back in Parshas Vayigash, Ki l'goy gadol asim chasham, that I'll make you into a great nation. Now, great could either mean multiplying them and their population, which is the next phrase in the pasuk, atzum varav, or it can mean great, that despite the fact that they were an immigrant generation, and you would think that an immigrant generation is meek and shy and feeble, they accomplished great things, and in particular for Yosef. So their presence was felt in Mitzrayim. They changed the landscape of Mitzrayim, which, by the way, of course, is one of the ingredients for this first explosion of anti-Semitism, that we're not just identified and separate as the other meanings of Mitzuyan Sham, and we don't just multiply, as I'll talk about in the next year, Atzum Varav, but we take a leadership position in our society, we imprint ourselves on the society. People have an affinity or an affection for separatist cultures, the Aborigines, the Amazons, who are the Amish, who eschew modern culture and live on the margins of society. But the Jews have a very bizarre composite or compound on the one hand, or merging on the one hand. They're separate, we're separate, but yet we're noticeable and we're impactful and we influence the society around us. And again, anti-Semitism always has to be understood, both at the experiential level and historical level. What are the social, political, economic, racial, cultural causes? And of course, at the metaphysical level, where does it come from, as Chazal said? Because we're the whistleblowers of humanity, and we challenge humanity to higher ground. Rashi, on that pasuk, Vayisham Lagoy Gadol, writes, Shehayu Yisrael Me'usafim B'makom Echad. And this reminds us of a word that I don't like using, but I'll use the word only because in this context, I want, for the sake of clarity, that we've lived in ghetto for much of our lives, or in very, very concentrated, segregated Jewish environments. And as difficult as ghetto life was, And as challenging as Gehel life was, it did create cultural insularity. It did allow us to maintain our identity, to maintain our bonds, our communal bonds, our communal functioning. And just think about how corrosive and how dissonant Jewish experience became when we left the ghetto in the 19th century, where we were invited to leave the ghettos that we had occupied. So sometimes we associate the ghetto with suffering and poverty and constriction and limited places to live. And then certainly in the modern context, where the Germans didn't just create ghettos but created open prisons, so the word ghetto is very sinister. But from a cultural and religious standpoint, ghetto and Rashi is claiming this is something that we don't lament or bemoan, but that's what allows us to sustain ourselves. Whereas the Ritva develops Rashi, and the Ritva has a parasha on Haggadah, can be found at the end of the Ritva on Pesachim. It's not just cultural insularity. Its galus is always a product of divisiveness and strife and hatred and discord and disunity. That's always a cause for galus, and it's always the cause for tragedy, as unfortunately it was this year. Pre-October 7th, we had so much social discord. And because our discord and disunity is the reason for galus, so galus is almost a challenge to see if now under more difficult conditions of galus, where peirud and dispersal and separation is more natural because we're living out of our country and there's very little national political unifiers, can we still manage to cluster together and to squirrel together unity? And the irony is that sometimes in galus we have more unity, and think about that in terms of some of the social discord that we experience in Eretz Yisrael versus some of the unity that's experienced in Chutzlitz for a range of different practical reasons. That's not just metaphysical, but there are practical reasons, and sometimes it's the irony that galus gives us an opportunity to try to recreate the unity we didn't have. And this galus was a product of the strife between Yosef and his brothers, and part of the challenge that Hashem gives us is not a punishment, it's a proving ground. Can you overcome some of the strife that led to your galus in the first place under more difficult conditions? The level of difficulty increases. So for Rashi, Mitzrayim doesn't mean great or prestigious and prominent, it just means separate, and the separation was geographical. Of course, we all know the famous Midrashim, and that's the one we default to in our discussion of the Haggadah. Shayu Yisrael Mitzrayim, there were three or four aspects that they maintained their national markers. They didn't change their name, they didn't change their language, they didn't speak Lashon Hara, they didn't change their sexual mores or customs. And the implication is, and it's a very ugly implication, but it's a true one, we don't like the ugliness in the Night of Pesach, we like to cover it up with cosmetics, but the ugliness is that they lost so much else. Am Yisrael fell into the cesspool of paganism. There was a complete religious collapse. Maybe Sheva Levi was different, maybe they weren't. And the only thing they maintained was their national markers, their national identity, their national unity. They spoke Hebrew. They named themselves by their Hebrew names. They kept their society intact without libel and slander. And the point of Yetzias Mitzrayim is that national identity is something valuable, even when it exists without religion. It's not the end point, it's not something we dream of, but it can serve as a platform for the reconstitution of religion. So without the national identity, what would have happened to the Jews in Mitzrayim? Would they have been able to leave Mitzrayim in the way that they did? Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can always create a supernatural revolution, a supernatural overhaul, but at least what happened in Mitzrayim is that they maintained their national identity, and that national identity served as a platform for the regeneration of religious identity. So according to Rashi, it was separateness and distinctiveness and insularity. According to Rashi, it was aided by the geography. According to the Medrash, other Midrashim, wasn't just aided by geography, it was aided by national identifying markers. And I said before, this combination of the two pshat, of the two meanings, on the one hand, prestigious, successful, impactful, influential, leadership, mitzuyan, and on the other hand, separate is very confusing for our host cultures because it doesn't conform with any other model of ethnic population or demographic. Either you're marginal or you're part of society. Somehow we're both. And in particular, there's a fascinating medrash that Yaakov himself was worried about Am Yisrael facing this promiscuous, debauched Egyptian society, a moral degeneracy and sexual frivolity. And because of that, he actually either marries his grandchildren off before they descend to Mitzrayim, or those who are too young to be married, they were already given their bar sherit. In the Yiddish language that we would use, they were told, you will marry this one, you will marry that one, in order to protect them and insulate them against some of this very odious sexual influence, or sexual promiscuity that was so prevalent in Mitzrayim. So a lot of people know the three that people kept. They changed their clothing, their language, their dress, but according to the Medrash, it was also number one, that they didn't fall into the degenerate or sexual promiscuity of Mitzrayim, in part because Yaakov had shielded them. And also, they didn't tell Lashon Hara, they didn't tell slander, which is not just a recipe for social fraternity and for social unity. What tends to happen is when you have discriminated races and discriminated classes, they turn in on each other. When people are exposed to discrimination and bigotry and hatred and abuse and persecution, it tends to become a food chain of persecution and abuse, where you pass it on to someone weaker than yourself, and then society starts to corrode from within, because there's so much abuse, it gets passed down. So the more successful slaves persecute the less successful slaves, and the least successful slaves persecute the women, and the women persecute the children, and it becomes a revolving door of abuse, and society can't move forward. And for the Jews not to fall into slander, and to be respectful of each other's privacy, especially when privacy wasn't something which was natural. They were slaves. They were living in inhuman conditions. According to some historical accounts of Egypt, they couldn't wear clothing. That's why they were so excited to get clothing when they left Mitzrayim. So this wasn't an environment of dignity, an environment of class, an environment which supported human nobility. It was an environment which they could have very easily fallen into classlessness and vulgarity. And they didn't. And part of the indicator was they kept the gossip and slander and hurtful language to a minimum. So something to think about for us, that sometimes social media has weaponized our tongues, and we're very quick to use social media to speak in ways that are hurtful or that are very aggressive. Those are more or less the three ideas of Goy Gadol. And again, there's no pasuk, and I'm interested to know why the Haggadah didn't quote the pasuk in which Hashem promised Yaakov a Goy Gadol. Probably because there's very little that that pasuk in Vayigash can inform us about the pasuk in Kisavu. It's the same phrase, Vayisham Lugoy. Parshas Vayigash is a Goy Gadol, but why doesn't it say the Goy Gadol? I'm not sure why the Haggadah didn't stretch the drasha by quoting the pasuk in Vayigash. And Mirtz Hashem, I hope that tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem, I'll have the time to record a shir for Wednesday morning, when I'll be on my way back already to Eretz Yisrael.